Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another bonus episode. I'm here with Jason Wyman again, and we're going to be talking about game dev. Jason, do you want to just remind people who you are real quick? I can't remember if it's game.dev or courses. I can't ever remember the dang domain.
Oh, sure. So, yeah, I'm Jason. I'm a game developer and a YouTuber now, I guess. And the site you're thinking of is game.courses, which is a weird domain name, but yeah, it works out really well because it's exactly what it is. Courses on game.
Yeah, and a great course. I've kind of gone through the beginning of the beginner course, but yeah, and it's really easy to follow. It's just I'm super busy, and so I keep, you know, I'm like, oh, I got to get back to that. But anyway, I was really curious. You know, we were chatting before this call, and so I'm kind of curious. You know, we were talking before the episode, and yeah, we were talking about different like jobs and game development, things like that. And I was curious, I asked you how you got into game dev, and I realized that would probably make a good chat. So yeah, how did you get into game development?
Well, it's pretty interesting, actually. I started coding as a kid, but I was terrible at it, and I never really dove into it. Like, you know, maybe 7 or 8, I did a little bit of programming. And like as a teenager, I would occasionally try to write a little bit of code here and there that would accomplish little game hacking tasks. I mean, my main goal as a kid was to hack my games that I was playing. So I would kind of learn how to write a little bit of code to try to hack those games. I was terrible at it. I didn't understand anything about what I was doing, but I really liked doing it and I had a lot of fun with it. And occasionally I'd make something that was somewhat useful for myself. Most of the time it'd be like a simple batch script, but occasionally I'd do something a little bit
We've
more
all been there.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody thought I was a wizard when I made my first batch script. You know, like, oh, what? How did you do that? It ran like 3 different DOS commands at once. Oh, Anyway, eventually I got to the point where I could write a tiny little bit of code, like nothing super amazing. But I ran into this problem where I had a keyboard that had a little screen on it, this G15. It was like one of the first ones that had a little screen on it. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And you could write programs for it. And I really wanted to learn how to write something to run on that to do something cool. My thought was like, I'll make a damage parser that shows like how much damage I'm doing in my game. So I can like see right there. Super cool, super useful stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I ended up writing that and it kind of worked. So it showed me like how much damage I was doing based on the info that was going into logs. So it would like read for all these log messages and just spam that stuff out. And I had just a tiny bit of experience. I mean, this is all Visual Basic, super simple code that I didn't understand, right? But I was able to use that little tiny bit of knowledge to get a job at Intel. So I actually applied for a job at Intel up in Washington. It was a student job, like for people who were still attending college and stuff. And I was getting set up to go back into school to do some computer science stuff. I ended up not actually finishing registering. So the whole time I was like, yeah, I'm going to start soon. I got to start soon. But like, I was just never found anything that really was the right program for me. But at least that's how I felt. So anyway, I was there just coding. And while I was working there, like right near the end of the first year, I was just at home playing video games, right? So this is where it gets weird. So let me rewind just a second. So throughout the, I guess, late 90s, I played a lot of EverQuest, like a lot of EverQuest, like 8 hours, 12 hours, 16 hours a day, easy. You know, like there were lots of days where I just played nonstop. And while I was doing that, I met a lot of people playing. Like I would just constantly talk to people in there. I ran a like raiding guild. So we'd go around and jump on and go kill all the bosses like the second they came on. They'd have everybody like logging in at 2 a.m. to jump on and go like race everybody over there was another guild in Hong Kong. So we'd go race them, like try to kill things before they did. And it was a blast, but I met a ton of people there. And some of the people that I met there were actually like the GMs for the game. They were the people who like ran the game and monitored the game. And, one of the GMs was actually one who, I don't want to tell that story real quick. There's one part I probably shouldn't dive into. But anyway, so while I'm at home, like at lunch, from this Intel job where I was doing a little bit of coding, writing some code that was like running some simple automated tests. This is very simple, like running command prompt commands in series, essentially, right? And then giving back the result. So while I'm at lunch from that, I log into EverQuest to just say hi to friends. I hadn't logged in like a year or two. Right? So I just logged in. I was like, I wonder if any of my friends still play. I'm going to say hi. I haven't played this game in a while. And like within 2 minutes, I get a message from one of those GM friends of mine, one of the guys who used to like come watch us kill raid bosses and come like, hey, you know, like, hey, go check out that raid boss. It's back up now. You guys can go get it. You know, like really cool guy. Anyway, he sends me a message going, hey, you want to come work for me? He's like, you know how to code, right? You want to come work for me? And I was like, what? So it's like, yeah, give me a call. So I called him up and he was running the QA department. So he was running the QA department on an MMO game that I'd been interested in the past. And I'd actually applied for a design job on and never heard back on. That was another story I'll get into. The reason I never heard back on it was kind of interesting because anyway, it involved people leaving right around there. So anyway, he gets me on the phone and he's telling me that, hey, we've got this really small QA team. So we've got a development team of over 100. And what? How big do you think that his QA team was, Charles?
I have no idea.
Two. One of them was part-time because it was QA and web development. The other guy was full-time QA. Like, okay, this is for like a full-scale MMO, right? Like,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's about to launch. So anyway, I was like, okay, what's the job? I mean, definitely I'll take it, whatever it is, but what's the job? And he said, what we want to do is try to automate some of the QA stuff and do some, like, it'd be some testing and some tools, like doing some QA related tooling to make things easier, maybe some scripts, some whatever types of stuff you can do to ease the job, right? It's like, all right, yeah, definitely. So I had to do a little code interview. The interview was like a phone interview. It was super, super simple. Like, what's a class? What's a struct? What's a method? Right. You know, like the very basics of C#, right? Because they were basically like interviewing me for super entry, super junior level C# job. Make sure I at least understood the language and that I could make an app that would compile. Maybe it wouldn't do anything useful, but could at least compile, right? That was kind of the end of the interview process. And then I told my wife, I was like, hey, babe, we're going to move to Washington. Okay. Just like, what? not to Washington, California, from Washington. Sorry.
Right.
So we were living in Washington with two little toddlers, my wife who had a job there. And I was like, yep. Can we just move to California? I was like, I really want to do this. So I was like, it's like my dream job. I got to go do this. Like if it sucks and you hate it and we don't want to stay, we can just move back. I was like, can we just try it? And my wife is always super supportive. So she was hesitantly on board, right? We ended up, it was.
Been there
was
with my wife.
Yeah. So it's really helpful though. I mean, I can only imagine it. Yeah. If my wife was the opposite, like I could still, you know, be doing something I hated. I don't know. Not that I hated Intel, but who knows what it would have been after that. I may have never gotten into the game industry.
Right.
So anyway, took that job and I had to move down here by myself. So I moved down to California by myself because it was like starting in a week. Right. So I'm like, okay, moved down. I moved in with the other QA guy temporarily and just started up that job. And it was kind of like my dream job. Like I'd get up every morning, like super thrilled to go into work. I'm like the weirdo who's like all pumped to be at the office. Like I'm sure you've seen it. Like anytime somebody starts their first like big corporate job, it's like the most exciting thing. They're excited to go into meetings and excited for about everything is thrilling and fun. Right. And that was definitely me for the first couple weeks. Right. And then on week three, I got a call from one of my friends and he was like, hey, did you get laid off? And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, no. He's like, yeah. Like, I heard you guys are having layoffs like really soon. They're getting bought by Sony and you guys are going to have a bunch of layoffs. I was like, what? I was like, no, I haven't heard anything about it. So I asked my boss, who wasn't there at the time. He was away on vacation. He's like, hey, we having some layoffs or something? I heard some rumors. I didn't tell him who it was from or anything because apparently this was like super secret information that had been leaked all around. Later on that day, there was a company-wide meeting.
Right?
Called everybody together. Yeah, they're like, we are being purchased, and we're going to have some changes coming, and we'll talk about them Friday. And then Friday, I got laid off.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was good stuff. So that was 3 weeks, and yeah, I was on the Friday. I was just gone. But right while it was happening, so like I went in there, and they're like, "Yep, hey, everybody that was in this section like knows that they're staying. Everybody else, sorry, you're laid off. You get the info." But while we were packing up and stuff, one of the producers actually came to me and told me that we had actually figured all this stuff out before you were hired. And we've decided that we're going to rehire you because the designers and QA team like what you've been doing so far. And
okay,
so like, just hang on and wait. I'll reach out to you soon. I was like, okay. Oh, like, that's weird. So that, you know, then I went through the whole process, got laid off, got my severance package, went out with everybody else that got laid off. And then like, I hung around for a couple more days, like a week or so. And they were like, yeah, we're going to get back to you soon. We'll get back to you soon. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm talking to my wife and she's like, why are you still down there if you like, you don't have a job there? And like, what's going on? I was like, all right, you're right. I'm going to come back up. So I drove back up to Washington thinking like, well, maybe that was kind of the end of my game dev career, right? But yeah, literally 3 weeks later, they called me up. I'm like, hey, this time, instead of it being my buddy in QA, it was the lead programmer, who's now my buddy, Ryan. he called and said, hey, we want to get you back in, but we want to have you do tools development instead. Because so while I was there doing QA stuff, like a lot of the job was just testing things, right? Like a build comes out, you test it, make sure like, hey, the designer made these 100 potions. Go make sure these 100 potions do what they say they do, right?
Right.
And make sure the whole game doesn't break on top of that.
Right.
But what I would do all the rest of the time was kind of explore the database. So I had a read-only account to the database, and I would just kind of look at it, and I loosely knew how to build web apps. Like I knew how to bind data to a web page and filter it and sort it and stuff. That was the one thing I could do relatively well with ASP.NET and beautiful AJAX calls, right? It was all the good old, really old ASP.NET stuff. This was wild. But I knew how to do it. I knew how to bind it up. And not a lot of other people at the company knew how to do that. Everybody else at the company knew C++, or they weren't programmers, right? Like, there weren't a lot of people that were doing C# and web stuff. So while I was building those tools up, I was using them a little bit myself. And then I would show them to the designers. And then the designer's like, hey, can I try that too? Because that's actually really helpful. And I started just building them a little bit of tooling too. So I built like two tools while I was there. One of them was like just to find and compare items. So you can just pull up a bunch of items, compare them, and see what the differences are. They'd be like, hey, why is this sword different than these other ones? I can't figure out what it is. They'd pull up like five and do a comparison. Anyway, because of all that, they, offered me this job to come back as a tools programmer, went through the whole interview process again, which was a bit more rigorous, including like actually flying down, meeting people, which was super stressful. I remember right after I left, I like drove down the street, pulled over, and threw up on the side of the road. I was like,
oh, wow.
I was like, oh man, it was like a super chill thing. I was just really stressed about whether or not I was going to get the job, right? Like, The environment and everything was good. The interview and all, the whole thing was good. It was just like, really, really, really want this job. So anyway, yeah, I got hired into that. And it was just a long journey on from there. A lot of it just came down to just saying yes every time, though. Like every time somebody would call with one of these opportunities, or a GM would want to just talk to me. Like, they're saying, hey, yeah, let's talk. Let's chat about things. Like, talking to a lot of people made a big difference for me. So I don't know.
That's funny. So it's interesting because you're talking about EverQuest, and I was like, yeah, I never actually played it. I played a couple of other massively multiplayer games. The one that I played the most of was the Star Wars Galaxies.
Yep.
I think the only experience I had with anybody talking about EverQuest with me, you're going to laugh, and it's funny, and so I'm going to tell it. But when I was in college, I got on, I think it was eHarmony. It was one of the dating apps, and I got matched up with somebody, and so met her for lunch somewhere. And it turned out she was divorced. And so the first thing she asked me when we sat down was if I had ever played EverQuest. And I was like, no. you know, I'd heard of it, but you know, I was like, no, I've never played it before. And she was like, good. And the whole rest of the lunch was literally her telling me how much she hated the fact that her ex-husband had played EverQuest nonstop. And that was the first and last time I met up with her. But yeah, anyway, so
that's awesome. Yeah, that's not a surprise. I've seen it happen where that game and just MMOs and games in general killed a lot of relationships if you can't prioritize.
Yeah, but anyway, it's interesting.
My wife actually said that too. We were talking last night and she was like, yep, EverQuest almost killed our relationship early on. She literally told me last night, yeah, that I would play it so much, so hardcore. Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that stuff, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, you make a lot of friends and you build up those relationships online, and it gets to be addictive and like, hey, you're talking to people, so
yeah,
it's hard to
absolutely. But yeah, so I'm interested now, you know, you're talking about some of this experience as a game dev, you know, and as a tools dev, you know, how do you go from that to like actually building and working on games, right? Because the one is not necessarily the other, right?
Right. And that's something that took me a little while to realize too. So when I first started up the tools dev job, my main job was to work on the designer's like data entry tool. They got this WebForms tool, WinForms is super, super old, right? WinForms tool that just binds to a database and updates some data, lets them create NPCs, items, and all that kind of stuff, right? So the job was going to be to work on that. At least that's like kind of what I expected. But I went in there day one, though, it was actually way different. They gave me the first job was, we want you to solve a problem with the way that designers' workflow happens. So designers' workflow at the time was that they would create data, they would set up all the stuff they wanted in this development database, and then that was connected to a development server. They would go test it on there, the QA team would go test it on there, they would get it approved, and then they would go do that exact same work on the staging server. And then that staging server data would eventually get pushed out to test. So every single time they did stuff, they did it twice, which meant they also made mistakes almost every single time because the second time around, something's a little bit different. And then we would have to test it twice for everything. It was an extremely slow process that was like constantly causing problems and breaking, where things would be one way on the development server and another way on our actual live production server. So the first thing they tasked me with was like, fix this thing. And I had to go in and build a whole tool around that, right? So I had to, what I ended up doing was like building a whole system with the existing tooling so that they could tag things and then decide which things are getting pushed out, essentially like a branching system in Git or something, just nowhere near as good, right? Like a very bad version of branching in there. In fact, I think it was even called a branch in there. So I put that all together and then started working on the tool for a while. And that went for like 9 months or so. After that, though, I started kind of running out of things to do in the tooling. Like people stopped having requests, people stopped wanting things, but there were a lot of these like gameplay requests that were coming along. And I was sitting there with four other junior developers who were doing gameplay type stuff. Well, one of them was doing graphics code. One was a graphics programmer, so he was working primarily just on graphics stuff. One guy was a gameplay programmer working just on gameplay related things, like trying to add in new features and new functionalities. And the other guy was a gameplay programmer, but he was mostly focused on performance and optimization. So they were all like doing these other things around me. And I was kind of watching and observing and seeing like that I was really really interested in the gameplay type stuff, like adding these new features and functionality type things. And I would occasionally get together with my buddy Adam, who was doing the gameplay stuff. And like we would talk about the code and talk about the things that were happening and the data that was there. And I was starting to learn a little bit more. I was getting a little bit better at C++, starting to kind of understand it more. I had written a little C++, but I was terrible at it. But I was kind of starting to understand it. And I was able to get a copy of the project compiling and stuff and just start experimenting around in there. So in my spare time, when I wasn't building cool stuff or filling out any requests or whenever I had any downtime, I would just kind of toy around in the gameplay code and see if I could figure out how to add things, fix things and stuff. And from there, it quickly just became a, hey, if you know how to do that stuff, here are some tasks, right? Like I did one thing. I was like, hey, did it. checked it in. They're like, hey, well, if you can do some of these, like, I'm going to give you a couple more tasks. Go try them out. And it was, you know, like I said, my buddy now, Ryan, who was the lead, is just really open and helpful and like really good at, I guess, just promoting growth, I think, in the company and on the team, and just letting people do things that were new and having people mentor too. So he would, I would do these things and then have one of the senior programmers come check, but see how I did, and then give me some feedback on the things that I was doing wrong or needed to improve on. And from there, it just very quickly got into writing gameplay code constantly. And it's been a blast ever since.
Like, nice. So it all happened there at the same company, more or less.
Yes. Yeah, I would say so. For me, it all kind of happened there, and it was all in a relative, I mean, I went from QA to writing gameplay code in about a year. It was like the turnaround. So QA, then tools, and then gameplay code. Now, to be fair, by the time I left that company, I still don't think that, I still really struggled to make my own game like from scratch.
Right.
What I found is like when you start working at a big place on a big project and you never get the opportunity to greenfield one, make something new, you really don't build up that skill set or those muscles or really have the idea of how you want to architect things if the projects that you're working on are already always architected. So that was something that I didn't actually learn there. Like the whole time I was working in this one place, I didn't learn it until I left there and started at a new startup making games on my own. And suddenly I had to do that. And I was like, holy crap, I don't know how to do this. So it's like, I know how to make games, but like I've got, you know, normally there's a plan, there's this design and this game, and I'm just adding things onto it. Like this is totally different. And that was a very different experience, but a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that makes sense. But at the same time, it's interesting because I think people have this idea that you have to be this expert in all these different things in order to become a game dev, and especially at a company. And it turns out that, I mean, you just got in and made yourself useful, and it opened a lot of those opportunities that you're talking about having had now.
That is what most of the game developers I know did. They got into some development job, something low level usually, and they just kind of worked their ass off and you know, tried and just got promoted and got a lot of opportunity there. I've seen it happen a bunch of times. Now, I'm sure it varies like from company to company. Some companies, like, you'll get in and doesn't matter what you do, you'll never get anywhere. But I've had great experiences at pretty much every game company I've ever been at. And most of the people that I know have too.
Right. So, you know, now that we've kind of heard your story here, I mean, what advice do you have for somebody that, let's say, I mean, most of our listeners on our shows, they have some experience, right? I would dare say that, you know, probably half of our audience is newish, you know, up to maybe mid-level, and then the other half are experienced folks. So, you know, depending on experience, you know, if somebody's saying, okay, I want to be a game developer, what advice do you have for them?
I think it depends. If they want to be a game developer and they're already really good at, you know, C# or JavaScript or something, I would definitely recommend trying to find a way in through the tools department of some company, if that's the kind of place you want to work at. It also depends like what kind of games you want to work on and what you want to do. If you want to work at a big AAA company and you have those skills, I would say try to get in through like a tools department. They'll pay really well, and it'll be a relatively easy job with a lot of like just lateral opportunity to move over to game development in a big environment. You know, you want to work at one of these super big places. But if you want to be like a game developer where you're just coding your own stuff and you're actually like writing the gameplay code, at first I would just try to learn how to make games. Like if you can, if you have the time available, I think just about anybody who's got the right mindset can learn how to just code some games. You can go through the process to make a simple little Flappy Bird in an hour, you know, Angry Bird in half a day. And you can build some bigger games as you just kind of practice and try things. All of the information is out there. It's totally available for free. Hundreds and thousands of tutorials on YouTube. They'll take step by step on how to make the game. And the code is not complicated. A lot of people think that like they need to write crazy stuff, but it's really simple code. So go through that process of learning and build a couple little mini games and then start applying for things. And I want to say this real quick. I don't know if you've seen this, but the problem that I see most people have is just a giant lack of confidence. Like they don't actually apply for jobs. I've met a lot of programmers who I think are really good. Like they're maybe not, you know, a top of their career. They're not like a senior level, but they're really good at a junior to mid level. And even they like are afraid to apply for positions because they don't think that they're right. good enough. Okay. What I would recommend is apply for a lot of positions, apply for everything that you think you might be qualified for, and go through the interview process and start practicing that, because people get, I think, more comfortable as you go through a bunch of interviews. You'll practice and get better at it. You'll understand what people are actually looking for. And when you fail an interview, ask them just how the interview went and if they have any feedback or advice. Sometimes, about half the time, they'll say no and tell you nothing. But about half the time, they'll actually give you some useful advice on why you weren't a perfect candidate. As long as you're not like crying and seeming super upset and they don't want to deal with that. But if you seem relatively calm, rational, like, hey, I don't think this went great, but can you give me some advice on things that you think I should work on? That kind of stuff. You get some really good tips on that. But I said, go out and apply for things is the biggest thing. What do you think, man?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's funny too, because I've done a fair bit of coaching. I've done a fair bit of, I'm doing it now, right? Just helping people become influencers in the dev space. And yeah, there are a lot of people that don't think they have what it takes, right? With the junior developers, a lot of times it's, well, I don't think I can go get that better job that I want, or I don't think I can, I'm qualified for the thing that I think I want. And yeah, most of the time it's, well, have you applied? Have you actually tried? And a lot of the time it's, well, no. And then they go apply, and they're coming back at me the next week, And my coaching was literally, well, go apply and see where you're falling short. And they come back, I got the job, they hired me. I can't believe they hired me. Oh my gosh, And then the other half of the time it was, well, they asked me about these three things and I really didn't know the answers to them. And I said, okay, well, what do you think it'd take to learn them? Oh, well, I've already done some of the research and I think I could be ready in a month or so. Okay, yep. Great. And so that's the kicker for a lot of people is it seems like it's this daunting thing because you just don't know what the unknowns are, right? And so it feels like there's this big bucket of I don't know out there that you have to fill in. And then you realize that, most of it's code. And then the rest of it is, it's specific to the industry. And so I'm going to have to figure some of that out. But they know that, right? And they know what skill set they're looking for from these folks. And so at the end of the day, you're going to be fine. And so you just have to figure that out. So that's been my experience too, is if you go out there and you do the interview, and in fact, a lot of times you don't even have to do the, hey, so I'm not sure this went well. And most of the time you can tell, right? Most of the time you'll know.
I would only do that if you're sure that it didn't go well. Right. if you're not sure, then don't say that.
Yeah. But even then, most of the time they asked me these handful of questions and I didn't know the answers, right?
Yeah.
And so you walk out to your car and you frantically type it into your phone so you don't forget the terms they ask you about. And then you go look them up. And then when you go to the next interview, you know the answers. Or the other thing that I've seen work out for people is they go back to the interviewer and they say, you asked me about these things and I went and looked them up. And it turns out that they're not that complicated. It's this, 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 and this. And I've seen people get hired doing that. So,
that reminds me of when I got hired at Qualcomm. One of the phone interview questions, I forget what it was. It was one of those silly algorithm questions, something about reversing a string. I forget what it was exactly. And I was like, I would just use a string dot reverse. how would you do it the other way? It's like, I don't know. I hadn't even thought about it. Like, I guess I could write something. So I wrote something up that was suboptimal. And then afterward, I was like, okay, I was like, that was like the one bad part of the interview, because like they were looking for me to write an algorithm. And I was like, I don't really remember what I would use here. So I kind of skipped past that. So immediately after the interview, I went, did a little bit of research, wrote up two examples of code with the using the algorithms in different ways, and then sent it over to him. And I got hired from that job. And like one of the things the guy who I sent that to told me was like, when you sent me that, I was really impressed. Like, you didn't know it, but you just went out, found the answer and sent it to me like within a couple minutes. So I was like, I highly recommend that. Like if it is something you don't know the answer to offhand and you can find it, go find it and get back to them. Especially if it was a small amount of stuff that you were kind of hung on.
Yeah, there was a, and I, I'm running out of time, so I'm going to kind of push us along toward the end here. But yeah, it reminds me of another guy that I was working at Mosey at the time, which was my first job out of college. I was actually working in tech support. And so people would call in or email in with problems and I'd help them. But when the programmers would interview folks, sometimes we'd sit in and then they would actually put them on a computer in our office because that was the only space we had, you know, just tiny startup, and have them work on a code challenge for an hour. And there was one guy that they put in there and he didn't finish the challenge. And he was so frustrated that he didn't finish the challenge. And so he asked him if he could actually get a copy of his code so he could, you know, so, and they let him, and he came back in the next day with the code and gave it to him, completed challenge, and they hired him.
Nice.
So, you know,
that's his persistence.
Yep. So, it just demonstrated a different thing that they were like, oh yeah, yeah, we want that. They looked at his code. It was great. You're right. He was just a little more thorough than other people who were trying to get it done in an hour. So anyway, I want to let people know because, you know, EverQuest, I almost said Evernote, sorry. EverQuest, I'm going to leave that in because it's funny. But EverQuest is a big game. And you know, you worked on a few other games. You've been teaching people to build games for a while. Like I said, your courses are well put together and easy to follow. You've got your YouTube channel. But if people want to learn how to build games, how do they find your course? And, you know, yeah, do you recommend a good place for people to, you know, kind of land on your website and get started?
Yeah. So for new people, I generally recommend they go through the free coursework first. Go through one of the free tutorial videos that I've got up there. I've got one on Flappy Birds, one on Angry Birds, just to make sure that they're really interested and kind of like they want to do game development. They're having fun with it before they make some big investment. The other courses, though, are on my site at game.courses. There's a programmer course that's primarily for beginners where I teach people how to go through the entire development process of building a game, kind of start to finish, building a full out platformer game. So mm-hmm. We'll go build essentially like Mario, but you can extend out and build whatever kinds of things you want, go through all of the code, assuming that you don't really know anything about programming at all or C#. If you know some C#, it's even faster because then you're mostly just focusing on the differences between, you know, regular programming and game programming and the big parts of the Unity engine that you're kind of tying in, just like you would with any other framework. You got to really understand the framework. And then I've got a bundle that's available with courses that take you all the way from there up to really advanced level where you're writing unit tests in your games and writing more complex stuff for bigger, large scale stuff for when you're ready for that.
Yeah. Good deal. Now, usually when I bring people on, and I think last time you were on, you actually had like a coupon or a deal that people could get. Is there something like, can I lean on you a little bit? And
let's use the coupon dev chat to get $100 off.
Okay. And is there a good, I'm going to link it up at like devchat.tv/games, but you know, in fact, go to devchat.tv/games and it'll take you to the place where you can get these bundles. But yeah, just kind of break down what people get in the bundle, so that they know, you know, what they're getting $100 off on.
Sure. So you get the programmer course, which takes you through, again, the beginner level stuff. You get the 6-week mastery course, which teaches you how to build 3 different games. And then a more advanced architecture course where we go into the more complex, just bigger game development stuff. On top of that, there's a hoodie, a mug, a bunch of other little free things that you get along the way, some art packs and other things. And then upcoming, I've got a new course that was also included in this bundle, where we're going to go through and build an entire RPG kind of live together. And we'll be having daily calls again and access to me constantly. And that's kicking off in just about a month. So if you're registered before then, you'll get into that for free as well.
All right. So I heard courses, I heard hoodie and mug, but what kinds of games am I going to be able to build at the end of this, right? I mean, I'm kind of imagining like Zelda or Mario, or maybe, you know, you've said Angry Birds a few times, but yeah, what kinds of games are we talking about here?
Sure. So the Angry Birds and Flappy Birds type things are more at the beginner free level. That's like the starting out stuff. Those are the mm-hmm. totally the ones that you can knock those out in a day. The ones that we'll be building here are more like, I guess, like Mario and Metroid style game to start off. So you've got some of the 2D stuff, go through all of the 2D libraries, understand how to do 2D physics and stuff.
I have and then to tell we jump you, over that's, to 3D. That's what my son wants to do because he's a big fan of Undertale and Deltarune. So
yeah, and yeah. for the beginner course, by the way, it is still multiplayer, and you use like PlayStation controllers or whatever you want. So you can use a PlayStation controller to control two characters or control them independently and kind of go over all of that. I even set it up to play on my arcade cabinet so I can run around with two characters, jump in and having fun. But after that, after the 2D stuff and kind of getting down the fundamentals, to go into 3D development. So building out a hack and slash type game where it's like a essentially like gauntlet type game where you pick different characters, run around, kill lots of bad things, get superpowers, you know, pick up weapons type thing. And then go on to first person and third person shooters. From there, the next biggest one is like full scale RPG. So covering things like NPC dialogues, crafting, quests, full inventory stuff, all of the things that you would need to build like a 3D RPG, and then switch down and from both a third person and top down mode with different gameplay modes. So doing like a 3D adventure mode where you run around and then switch over to a top down shooting mode and then back and forth. So the much more complex stuff so that people can kind of build whatever type of game they want. And along the way, you can really theme it however you want. So I'll give people themes that I like to use. So with this new RPG, it'll be sci-fi themed. But if people want to change out the art, that's one of the things I like to show them is like, here's how you can make this RPG, you know, a fantasy game instead. It's totally different.
Steampunk.
Not changing any code. Yeah, you're just changing out the art and a little bit of the wording here and there, you know, and kind of run them through all that stuff too. So that's a lot of different game types for a lot of different people. But we definitely start off with 2D and keeping it relatively simple so that it's approachable and easy for anybody to get into.
Right. And then the other question is, does this package, what platforms does it show you how to make these games for, right? Because I'm assuming that you can play them on your PC or Mac, but, you know, I'm also imagining like Xbox or PlayStation or some of the gaming consoles, phones, iPads, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. It's something that I sometimes gloss over because I forget that it's not obvious, like from a software engineering perspective, but when you build things with Unity, you can pretty much deploy to any platform. Any gaming platform for sure is supported. There's a 20-something platforms out there now, all of the consoles, PC and Mac, of course. The bigger ones, though, like mobile, work great. So one of the games that we'll build will run onto a mobile device. But in general, I don't do too much mobile development in my courses just because it requires everybody to have a somewhat similar device to kind of follow along. The one thing that I do recommend, though, for all of my students and that they like to do is building out WebGL versions of the game. So one of the options in Unity is to do a web build. It'll actually compile the game down into a WebGL build that you can just drag, upload to one of two sites that I like to use, itch.io or simmer.io. You literally just drag the folder up. Your game is up there online and you can start sharing it right away. Or there's even a built-in publishing option that you can publish the game from the editor. And then people can go in and play it. And it, for the most part, just works in a WebGL browser. So you just play it in the browser, works for almost everything. And the same is true for going out to the other platforms, except you know, as you get to PlayStation or Xbox, you start to meet some specific requirements that they actually set. So you have to like hit certain targets and you have to get approved for certain platforms, depending on the platform.
Very cool. All right. Well, we're out of time. I'm going to tell people go to devchat.tv/games. Use the code DEVCHAT for $100 off. And then go build some awesome games. Let us know what you built.
Yeah, definitely share them.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up here. And until next time, folks, Max out.